Oops the Podcast, Episode 7, Michael Maximilian, Ruby on Rails. I'm Daniel Steinberg, your host for this episode. We talked to IBM researcher Michael Maximilian, who's communications chair for this year's Oopsla. Max is presenting a tutorial on Ruby on Rails, which includes REST and mashups. He's given this tutorial before, but he explains that
what will differentiate Oopsla from the rest is the fact that they will appreciate a lot more the value of an object-oriented language like Ruby and the kind of new features that this object-oriented language compared to other ones like, say, Java has, especially things like closures, things like mixins, a lot of the dynamic aspect, open classes, and so on, are going to be, I imagine, a lot more appreciated by the Oopsla community than the rest. There's going to definitely be a few people in the audience that will be appreciative of the power of Ruby, the language, because I think at the end of the day, that's really what makes Rails and the entire set of communities that are forming around Ruby possible, is because Matt, the creator of Ruby, hand-choose a bunch of different features from different object-oriented languages that he learned, by the way, going to different Oopslas, because he was a regular attendee in the late 90s.
What is it that makes Ruby such an attractive language for you?
You can do stuff in Ruby in a day that, you know, most other places, it take you maybe 5-6 times the time or the effort. And I think it's first the fact that Matt chose a set of features, object-oriented features, that are key. And out of those, I would have to sort of mention, closures as being maybe the most important piece, and also a series of other features like open classes and the ability to do mixins, which is essentially adding functionality versus inheriting many different places. So these sort of key features make it very dynamic, so that in the case of Rails, where you're building a web application and you're connecting to a database, that you can make changes to the models and to the controllers and to the views. And the underlying Rails application server, say Mongrel, can reload those classes. So that allows you to see an immediate feedback on your changes. Now, of course, this is not new. People in Smalltalk land would say, well, we've been doing that since the beginning. And that's true. However, I think the thing that sort of differentiates maybe Ruby with other languages is that, again, Matt chose to pick a series of features, but also a series of syntactic sugars, if you may. So one example is the fact that the language doesn't require you to use parentheses. Because you don't have to use parentheses in, you know, method calls, what ends up happening is that you have the ability to write code in Ruby that looks very much like a different language. And it's really amazing, because you look at some of the Rails code or some other things called DSL, or domain-specific languages that you build in Ruby, and they look completely different from Ruby itself. However, they're all very valid Ruby code. And part of the reason is because you can omit parentheses so that your statements look like they are coming from a different syntax in the language. And then the other thing also is the fact that the language has built-in support for all those basic primitive types, such as hashing and arrays and so on, so that when you use those things in your code, they look a little bit different than objects and classes and so on, because they are part of the language. In Ruby, you have no typing, so it makes it very dynamic. You have this set of a lot of flexibility in your syntax. There's a lot of convention, especially in Rails. However, the flexibility is a lot more than in those languages. That's sort of the best way I can answer it. But maybe a better way is for you to look at the same code written in Ruby and written in other languages, like say Java, and then you'll see. It's extremely concise.
That seems very taxing to a newbie, that so much of the coding in Ruby on Rails is through convention and not enforced by the compiler.
I think that's a very good question. Also, if you're a real programmer, you should learn many different languages, because then you get a better perspective on how to compare. So what you'll see is that every language has its own set of conventions, but it depends on how important they are. In a framework like Rails, which is not a language, it has extreme sort of number of those conventions to a point where if you don't follow them, you don't get those productivity boosts. So in those cases, you're right. As a newbie, you'll have a significant, you know, maybe not a significant, but you have a learning curve. How I think what happens is those conventions, I think in the most part, are very, very sensible. You could probably create the same conventions too. So an example is that in Rails, a very basic set of conventions that you have to accept at the beginning. I mean, there are ways to go around them if you don't want to follow those conventions, but clearly you'd have to work hard to do that. But one basic convention is that when you create your model, the name of the model is singular, but the name of the table where the models are going to be persisted in the database are in plural and all lowercase. So the models are camel cases, and then the tables are lowercase with underscore with a plural. So what that means is if you have a class model, model class called person, the plural of person is not persons, clearly, it's people, and that will be all lowercase for the table. So Rails actually does that for you. So it will understand that the plural of person is people and that it has to be lowercase. So I think all of the convention in Rails, the majority of them, I should say, are very much similar to that. And they actually, at first, are a learning curve. Once you get past that learning curve, I think they are a boost in productivity, because what they do is they allow you to sort of understand code a lot faster, because you don't have to think about a new convention. The convention is already accepted by the community, and also it's sort of imposed by the framework. In Ruby, there are less conventions. The conventions are not enforced pretty much by the language, except for a few, and you could sort of go out of your way to break those conventions easily. However, by following them, which, you know, might take you a week to sort of get used to the fact that, you know, if you're coming from Java methods or, you know, all lowercase with underscore, whereas in Java, they are, you know, sort of camel case. And those are more style, I think, than convention per se. And those are not really enforced. So the framework is what, you know, maybe enforces a little bit more, or maybe not doesn't enforce it, but if you don't follow it, things won't work the way you expect them.
You mentioned Smalltalk earlier. Oofla probably contains a higher concentration of Smalltalk programmers than other populations. They've probably been exposed to Seaside. So how do you position Rails and Ruby against Smalltalk and Seaside?
I think it's a fair question. Seaside is pretty amazing. It has features in it that we wish in Ruby community and Rails we had. I'd have to admit to that. However, I think a lot of things tend to happen that way also in you know, the industry. What I mean by this is that, you know, a lot of times the best technologies or the most elegant technologies do not necessarily win. And I think that might be the case with Seaside, because Smalltalk is fantastic as a language. I've used it in the past. But it has this sort of environment that it brings you in, and you have to sort of adopt that environment. You save your images and you use these fancy, you know, editors that they have, like, for instance, Squeak. And if you're comfortable in that and you learn it, then you're okay and you do pretty well. And things are live and it's really fantastic. However, it doesn't mesh, I think, all that well with a very well-known metaphor for the computer, which is the file-based system, which is more Unix-like, where you have commands and you can chain those commands together like pipes. Languages like Smalltalk and maybe even Self has suffered because they require you to go from this Unix-like metaphor for the computer that we know and we use, whether you love it or not. I mean, that's not relevant, but that's the primary one. I mean, I use a Mac, and that's what it has. And if you use Windows or Vista, I mean, it still has that sort of metaphor, versus going to another one where you sort of adopt a framework or a set of tools where you're sort of moving objects around and the code is live and things like that. So I think there's a huge shift, that is required for the Smalltalk-like languages, which has been chronicled and also in the literature. So I think Seaside is an example of this, where, you know, in order to use Seaside, you do have to sort of, you know, be very proficient in that, you know, other environment for programming. Whereas, you know, with Ruby and Rails, well, guess what? I mean, it integrates completely the other way really well into the Unix style development, which a lot of people are very, very familiar with. Plus, it gives you that flexibility in terms of seeing immediate changes, which you can, of course, see or also have with Seaside. So I think that's the battle more than anything else. Smalltalk certainly has a fair advanced features in the language itself that makes it very interesting, but also could be a learning curve. But I think maybe the learning curve from that aspect may be the same with Rails. And then the final thing is, not to knock on Seaside at all, but the Rails community has advanced so fast that you end up with, out of the box, all set of new features. I'll give you an example. So when Facebook announced their platform last year, and within 3 months or 4 months, there was already two or three starting nascent, you know, Ruby frameworks. And as you know, Facebook is mostly built in PHP. You know, they have other languages and stuff. I don't know the details of internally, but they are certainly a big PHP shop. And when they released their framework, you know, they assume, well, the first language would be PHP. Nothing wrong with PHP, but it's not object-oriented as much as other languages. It has other sort of side effects, but it's not all that great. However, what happens is the Rails community and the Ruby community created that framework. I don't know if there's one for Seaside or Smalltalk, and I haven't checked, so I'd have to Google and see. Maybe there's one now. But within 3 months, to a point where I go to a lot of Facebook meetups here in Silicon Valley, and from anecdotal evidence is that greater than 50 to 60% of the different applications that people come and show on those meetups, which is sort of a group of people showing, oh, this is what I created, they're all Ruby on Rails. So the point is that with Rails, you get out of the box and very quickly a community that's sort of keeping up with the rest of the world.
One of the things I like to get out of a tutorial is a feel for when I should and shouldn't use a particular technology. So if you're getting ready to deploy a website, when should you and when shouldn't you use Ruby on Rails?
For me, it's if the sweet spot for Rails is a database-driven web application that wants to take advantage of modern features, meaning Web 2.0 features, and that doesn't have the ambition of being as big as an Amazon or eBay. I think if you're anywhere in between this sort of set of constraints, you're in good shape for using Rails. And then finally, I would say, in a lot of cases, applications don't know they're going to be scaling. They don't know. So maybe the criticism to that answer will be, well, you know, at this point, I don't know, but I don't want to have the constraints. What I would say is that there are ways to scale it. There are ways to make it work. The best thing is get your application up and running to get some customers, and then make sure you follow some of the best practices, so that you can use it. And then a final thing I should say also is that Rails, as opposed to say Java or Java EE, doesn't have built-in support for old legacy stuff. You know, what I mean by this is, you know, the world works on, you know, for good or bad, a majority of the world, and especially the finances of the world, works on COBOL. And that's just a reality. And it's a good thing in some sense, because this is good code and it works well. But it means a lot of time that you need to integrate with this back-end, legacy, stuff. And Java has a bunch of adapters, and, that makes that process very easy. If what you're doing is talking to this type of an application at the enterprise, then Rails may not be the perfect answer there. However, where it fits is if you can somehow take that Java code that's going to be talking to the backend COBOL and expose it as a REST service or even a SOAP service in some cases, or an Atom feed maybe better, then you can definitely put a Rails front end. So Rails works really well at the front end of, you know, the enterprise, and certainly for startup, it's an excellent place for experimenting, also, I guess, in the enterprises. And then finally, if what you're doing is a database-driven application, then it's just a sweet spot.
That's IBM researcher Michael Maximilian, who's also this year's communications chair at Ooopsla and is presenting the Ruby on Rails tutorial. Thank you for listening to the Ooopsla podcast. If you want to know more about the conference or would like to listen to additional podcast episodes, visit the Ooopsla website at ooopsla.org. This episode is released under a Creative Commons license.